and will ever be. What can you offer it? Larda understood immediately his true question was, What can you offer me? She wished Radu were here. He would have this old fox eating out of his hand. Larda fixed a cold glare on him. Your mistake is in thinking I care one whit about offering anything. The system is broken. I am going to change it.
People who agitate for change end up dead.
Larda bared her teeth at him in a smile. We will see who is dead at the end of all this. Toma smiled, a slow spread of his mouth and ending with his dark eyes.
I think I see what you have to offer, then. Matthias was right to send you here. You have much potential. I will advise you. There are many boyars I can sweep into your support. A few will need aggressive persuasion, but I suspect you excel at that. Under my guidance, you will get your throne in Turgoviste. I would be proud to be at your side, serving a Draculeshed prince.
He held out his hands in offering, the fire in the hearth burning behind him. Larda remembered her joke about making camp with the devil, and a sudden revulsion seized her. She did not want to have his help or anyone's, but she needed it. Thank you. The words grated against her teeth like sand.
My men will show yours where they can stay. Let us take a meal while we discuss the surrounding regions. Many of these boyars have done simply horrendous things to their people.
He clucked his tongue in pity, but his eyes looked like they were tallying encouraging financial ledgers as he considered Larda. 33. April 19th to the 21st. Radu's information had led to more successful cannon fire, and he paid the price. Every day he watched as the adjusted bombardment targeted the walls with more devastation, and every day he stumbled home, exhausted from trying to fix the holes. His aide to Mahmed put his own life in constant danger. Did Mahmed worry about that? Was he sorry? Nazira's work was equally exhausting, but in other ways. Helen cries constantly, she said in the morning, the only time they saw each other. I have to spend half our time reassuring her that Coco, the Italian captain she is mistress to, really does love her, and that when this is all over, he will leave his wife in Venice for her. It is all I can do not to slap her and tell her she is wasting her life. The other women mostly spend their time in church praying, and when they are not there, they are complaining of how hard it is to get food and how they had to donate their tapestries to the walls. How is your work? Radu pulled on his boots. They were caked with dust from the walls.
The bombardment is going better, but there have been no gaps big enough for a full-scale assault yet. Mahmed sends skirmishing troops to harass the forces and make certain no one is able to rest. I wonder if we can do anything more.
Nazira sat next to him on the bed, leaning her head on his shoulder. It is wearisome work, for both souls and bodies. If you want to leave, I will be at your side. But do you feel that if we fled the city and joined the camp, we would be able to say we had done everything we could? I know you will not be satisfied with anything less. Nor will Mahmed.
Radu sighed, running his hands through his hair and pulling it back at the base of his neck. He missed wearing turbans. They kept his hair out of his face and provided protection from the sun. There was something soothing, too, in wrapping one around and around his head in the morning. All his comforting rituals were taken from him here.
You are right. We will stay. Nazira patted his hand.
I did hear something that will make you happy. Word is spreading that the Ottoman navy is approaching, with doom in its terrible wake. Our friend Suleiman will be here soon, and maybe that will signal a quick end.
Radu allowed himself a weary smile tinged with hope. It would do his soul good to see those boats, and it would not even hurt that he was not on them, because the sea was the one place he wanted to be even less than on the wall. I have been looking everywhere for you, Cyprian said, joining Radu at the wall, overlooking the golden horn. Radu had avoided Cyprian ever since that night they fought side by side. It was easier this way, though he still caught himself watching the men for Cyprian's way of walking, with shoulders leading, arms swinging wide. You leave so early and are never there at mealtimes. I missed you. Cyprian looked out over the water and tugged at the cloak around his neck. Nazira is good company, but it is not the same without you. It had been 3 days since Nazira brought news of the approaching fleet. Every spare moment Radu had, he spent at this wall, looking for the ships. Today his long wait was answered. He wished Cyprian were not here, were not leaning close. It made it so much more difficult to be truly elated. The massive chain held, an impassable barrier stretching between Constantinople and Galata. In the horn, Constantine's ships loomed, ready to repel any attempt at destroying the chain. They were Venetian merchant ships, mostly, far taller and wider than the swift Ottoman war galleys. They were also armed to the teeth and well practiced in repelling pirates. On the other side of the chain, just outside of firing range, Radu's fleet made the water look like a forest of masts. His heart swelled with pride to see it, and he shifted guiltily away from Cyprian. The fleet had arrived the day before, but this had been his first chance to come and see it in person. He wondered which boat Suleiman was on, wished he could see the admiral in full command of the finest navy in the world. Cyprian looked on, devastation marring his face. So many more than we had planned for. You were right, as always. Where did they find sailors? Greek mercenaries, mostly. We will be our own undoing yet. Radu hoped that was true, but still wanted to extend some comfort to Cyprian. It was an impulse he could not deny, and he thought again how this would all have been easier had Cyprian abandoned them to their fortunes once they had reached the city. His insistence on friendship made everything tight and aching in Radu's chest. Radu again opted for truth as a way to avoid lying.
But the Ottomans cannot get past the chain.
And neither can anyone else. Which means we are cut off from help. Men, weapons, supplies. Nothing more is coming. What we have now is what we will have at the end. Whatever that may be.
Still, the sea walls are safe. Even if the Ottomans get past the chain, launching an assault from this side is nearly impossible. The Sultan knows that. He means to press from all sides to wear you down. But you will not have to spare too many extra men to guard this wall. The Lykos River is his avenue in.
Cyprian considered Radu wryly.
You still think more like an attacker than a defender.
Radu blushed, his sheepish expression unfeigned.
I spent many years looking at maps over Mahmed's shoulder.
What is he like?
As a person, not as a sultan. This past year the sultan and the person have become inseparable.
As Radu had seen Mahmed grow into himself and his power, he had also seen Mahmed grow further away. He was both proud and dismayed.
Before that, focused, driven. He had a burning intensity that did not slacken, no matter what area of his life he directed it toward. He saw something unobtainable, and that was the only thing he wanted.
Like you? Cyprian's tone was soft and without accusation. It was merely curious, as though he was trying to fill in parts to a story he had heard only a few passages of. Radu shook his head, keeping his eyes fixed on the water. The skies were leaden above them, making the sea the same color as Cyprian's eyes. But the sea was safer to look at.
No, it was the other Draculesht sibling who was the challenge.
Your sister? She was part of his harem?
No.
Radu grinned ruefully, finally looking at his companion.
That was precisely the problem. She was not, and she never would be. And so he wanted her more than anything else.
What happened?
She left.
She should not have left you.
I wanted her to. I pushed her toward it. I thought that if she was gone, Mahmed would finally see.
Radu bit off the end of the sentence. It was so easy to talk to Cyprian. Too easy. He should not be admitting these things, not to him, not to anyone. Cyprian filled in the rest of the sentence for him.
But Mahmed could only see the things he did not have. He is blind.
Radu cleared his throat and looked away.
Well, she left me and she left him too. And because of that, I think he will always love her. Or at least, want her. He cannot abide failure. She was his Constantinople.
Radu smiled, having entertained the same thought before. But it was not quite right.
I am afraid Constantinople is his Constantinople. Nothing could ever overtake this city in his heart.
A shout from the tower next to them drew their attention back to the water. The Ottoman ships had broken formation and were turning away from the chain. Radu could not understand why until he saw four huge merchant ships barreling through the water toward the Horn, and directly toward the Ottoman navy.
"Those are Italian ships," Cyprian said, leaning out over the wall. "They are making a run for the Horn."
The ships safely in the Horn edged closer to the chain, uselessly firing cannons at the Ottoman fleet. They were too far away to make a difference. Radu could almost feel the desperation from here. Everyone could see the Italian ships, but no one could help them.
"It is four ships against more than 100. They will never make it through."
Cyprian smiled grimly.
"Do not discount them. They are born on the water. If the wind stays with them, if luck is on our side..."
Cyprian's lips moved silently, whether in prayer or something else, Radu did not know. Together they watched the battle play out from above. Radu did not even have to pretend to be emotionally invested in the other side. He could look on with the same intensity as everyone else, and no one would know his hopes were with the Ottoman navy. It did not look promising. He had assumed the numbers would give them the advantage, but the tall, heavy merchant ships cut through the water as though it were nothing. The smaller galleys struggled to navigate the choppy sea, their inexperience showing immediately. They fired cannons at the Italian ships, but no cannons large enough to be effective could be placed on the lightweight galleys. The four ships barreled straight through the middle of the entire might of the Ottoman navy. Cyprian cheered with the crowd that had gathered on the wall. Excited chatter around them made it feel more like a sporting event than a battle. Radu was devastated to see that it was not anything like a battle after all. His navy was useless. Then he realized the wind was no longer flinging sea air in his face. Everything had gone still around them, and around the merchant ships. As fast as they had been slicing through the water, they now drifted, directionless. And the galleys had oars. Suleiman wasted no time. The large galleys pulled in close, the smaller galleys edging between them to get right next to the merchant ships. With no wind, the ships were at the mercy of the water, which was causing them to drift slowly but surely across the Horn to the Galata shore, where Mahmed already had men waiting. But the Italian sailors would not go down easily. They lashed the four ships together to prevent them from being separated and picked off. So many of the Ottoman vessels had converged, it looked like a sailor could walk from one end of the sea to the other without ever touching water. The first small galleys to reach the merchant ships never had a chance at boarding. Large stones and barrels of water were dropped by the on-deck loading cranes, damaging some of the galleys and sinking others. The sounds of the battle, the snapping of wood, the shattering of stone, and the clash of steel against steel rang through the Horn. And always, a sound Radu heard even in his sleep, the screams of men. There was a quality of voice, some subtle shift, that allowed him even at this distance to pick out which screams were screams of killing and which were those of dying. When the Ottomans managed to throw ropes up, the ropes were cut down. Hands were sliced off when they tried to find purchase.
burning pitch was thrown, and Radu watched as men fell into the water to be extinguished or onto their own boats, lighting them on fire with their bodies. The Italians had the advantage of height and weight, but the Ottomans kept coming. For every galley sunk, two more pushed into its place. It was exhausting to watch. The sun, too hot for once, had shifted overhead, marking the endless passage of time. The crowd around Radu and Cyprian had gone quiet except for the occasional prayer or gasping sob. Though the Italians fought bravely, the outcome was inevitable. They drifted ever closer to the shore, where the Ottoman cannons would take them out if the galleys did not manage to first. It was only a matter of time. Radu closed his eyes in relief as a breeze cut through the sun, battering his face. And then he opened his eyes in horror. A breeze from the south that turned into a stiff wind. A ragged cheer went up along the wall as the Italian ship's sails caught. They ploughed through the galleys around them, pushing them aside like branches, moving forward as one. Their escape was unavoidable, unassailable. Radu looked to the Galata shore, and his heart sank. There, astride a beautiful white horse, a tiny figure watched as his navy, more than 100 ships, the best in the world, was bested by 4 merchant boats. Radu's project, Radu's navy. He hung his head with shame. Against all odds, they had failed. Mehmed's horse reared. Then he turned it and rode swiftly away. All along the wall the citizens cheered and jeered, ebullient with the miracle of the Italian boats. The chain had been slipped free to allow them through. No galleys could catch up to take advantage before the chain was closed again. It was over. For once, Radu was invited to a meeting with the Emperor. But this one he wished he could avoid. The humiliation of his navy's defeat settled in his chest like a sickness. It was a kindness, then, that he was not with Mehmed. He could not bear to think of what Mehmed would say, how disappointed he would be. He had trusted this task to Radu, and Radu had failed utterly. Though Radu knew he should not, he took some small comfort in Cyprian's coming with him. He was unmoored, worn down by time and failure. At least for Cyprian he would have to pretend to be okay. That was a good reason. That was the only reason. He would not allow any other reasons to crave Cyprian's smile or a touch of his hand. In Constantine's meeting room, Radu and Cyprian joined Giustiniani, the pretend Ottoman heir Orhan, the Italian commander Coco, whom Radu knew only through Nazira's stories of the unfortunate Helen, and the Emperor. Constantine moved with more lightness than Radu had seen. He was again barefoot, pacing with joyful energy. "Grain, arms, manpower, 200 archers! But that is not the true strength. They have brought us hope. More can come, more will come. That wind was the hand of God, delivering a blessing to this city. The first of many." Coco nodded, unable to avoid Constantine's infectious joy. "One good Italian ship is worth 100 infidel boats." Giustiniani laughed, clapping Orhan on the back. "So you see, we Italians can do good things. I hear the Sultan is furious. The Admiral will pay for his failure." "Suleiman," Radu spoke before he thought better of it. He tried to shift his face into impassivity, but it was impossible. "I knew him. Is he... will he be killed?" A gentle hand on his back startled him, but he did not turn around. Had Radu's grief been that obvious to Cyprian? "He lost an eye in the battle. That alone probably saved him, as testament to how hard he fought." Giustiniani snorted. "For all the good it did him. Our scouts report he was flogged and stripped of all rank and authority. One of the pashas is in charge of the boats now. Not that it matters. We have nothing to fear from the sea." But do the Venetians know that? Cyprian asked. They must have heard of the size of the Ottoman navy. How can we get word to them that they are guaranteed safe passage to the Horn?
Radu wished desperately that Lada were here. She would not be sad. She would not let this failure derail her. She would figure out a way to turn it to her advantage. She would use the enemy's strength and confidence against them, just as she had when they snuck into the palace under Halil Pasha's nose, putting Mahmed in place to take the throne when his father died. A flicker of delight lit Radu's soul as he remembered that night. All Lada's fierce Janicheris, dressed in veils and silk robes, trying to walk like women so they could sneak past the watching guard. And then he knew exactly what Lada would do.
"Do you have any Ottoman flags?" he asked.
Everyone turned to him, puzzled. Orhan, a quiet, delicate man who wore a turban along with his Byzantine styles, nodded.
"I have a supply of them." "What about uniforms?"
Constantine spoke.
"We have over 200 prisoners. They have no use of their uniforms in our dungeons."
"Send out 3 boats tonight under cover of darkness. Small, unthreatening ones. I will teach their crews a few common greetings in Turkish. Have them fly the Ottoman flag and sail as close to the Ottoman galleys as they can."
"Slip by in disguise."
Constantine tugged at his beard thoughtfully.
3 small boats could get out where 1 large ship cannot. Task them with finding the aid we need, and then they can return, heralding the ships that will follow so we can be prepared to welcome them.
Yesenyani stretched in his chair, leaning back.
"It is a good plan. Coco, select the men. They leave tonight."
The Italian captain nodded. Orhan excused himself to get the flags, and Giestignani went to find suitable uniforms.
"Well done," Cyprian beamed at Radu.
Radu could not meet that smile full on, so he looked at the floor. He would not have time to send word to Mahmed. He did not need to, though. He wanted the boats to escape, because if they could escape, they could return. And when they did, Radu would have first warning of a Venetian force. Then he could warn Mahmed and find some sort of redemption. Mid-April. This time Stefan did not return alone from scouting. He walked with a peculiar guilt, slinking back into camp with a girl.
"What is this?" Lada barely glanced at the girl.
"You were supposed to bring information on Silviu's land and men." Toma Bazarab had sent them here first. Silviu did not have much in the way of soldiers, but he was a Dinesh, and in the path of all their future goals. They could not leave a close-blood relative of the prince behind. Lada was to negotiate his support. If that was not possible, she was to place him under house arrest and leave precious men here to watch him. Toma Bazarab would hear no arguments against it.
"Well?" she demanded.
Stefan shrugged, clearing his throat at the same time, as though he could force the words out. Lada had never seen him like this. Fear seized her. Was he injured? She looked him up and down, but he did not appear harmed. His face flushed a deep red.
"She caught me."
Lada finally looked at the girl. She was Lada's height, perhaps younger than her, but not by much. She met Lada's stare with a bold, unflinching one of her own. Her narrow jaw was set, and her dark eyes burned. Rough cloth wrapped her hair, and her clothes seemed made for someone else. They hung all wrong on her body, loose in the shoulders and pulled tight across her stomach, which... "Oh," Lada said, frowning. The girl's hands jerked instinctively in front of her pregnant belly. Then she deliberately moved them away.
"Caught your man spying. Told him I would turn him in unless he brought me here."
Lada raised her eyebrows at Stefan. He shrank farther into his cloak. No one ever noticed him. He drifted invisibly. A weary traveler no one wanted. That was his entire purpose.
"Well,
Larda turned her attention back to the girl. Here you are. What do you want?
You are that woman, right? I thought you would be taller. And older. You are very young.
Larda gave her a heavy look.
I assume there are many women in this country.
You will have to be more specific.
I heard rumors. You are staying with Toma Bazarab. Took in men for soldiers. Peasants talk.
Larda shifted uneasily, thanks to Toma's men. Both his trained soldiers and the farmers they had conscripted, her ranks had swelled to over 100 men. The peasants were poorly trained and poorly fed, but they had a gritty eagerness that could not be undervalued. And they did not eat much, which was good. The girl leaned forward, burning with intensity.
Are you going to do that in more places? Take men for fighting the prince?
Yes, Larda said.
Good.
The girl's hands fisted over her stomach.
I want the Dineshed dead.
It was a dangerous sentiment to voice aloud. Larda wondered at her daring. Does your husband want to join? He should have come himself. The girl let out a harsh laugh, a burst of bitterness more than humor.
I have no husband. Tell her what you saw, Stefan.
To Larda's surprise, he followed the girl's order without question. Lots of girls. In the fields, most, he paused, then nodded toward the girl's stomach. Most like her.
And between us, not a single husband. A few years ago, we had a nasty bout of plague. Killed most of the boys. There weren't enough men to work the fields. None to marry daughters to. So our loving Dineshed Boyer decided he would take care of us himself.
The girl paused, as though waiting for something. When Larda did not respond, she spoke again.
No husbands, the girl glared at Larda for her stupidity. No husbands, but all our babies are bastard cousins.
Clarity finally caught Larda in its horrible grasp.
Oh. So you will not find many men here to swell your ranks. Our boy a worm, Silvio, will agree with whatever you want, because he is a coward. But he will betray you to the prince at the first opportunity. And he has nothing to offer. You should kill him. If not, then leave. These lands are a waste of your time.
Larda felt anger rising within.
Why? I told you we have no men.
No.
Why did you let this happen? Why did all of you let this happen?
The girl's face purpled with rage.
Let it happen? What choice did we have? We give ourselves or our families starve. What choice is there in that?
Does Silvio work the land?
No, of course not.
Does he tend the animals?
No.
Does he do a single thing that directly feeds you or your families? The girl looked as though she very much wanted to hit Larda.
He owns it. He owns it all.
Larda paused, weighing her options. Then she shrugged. She would negotiate her own way.
Not any more.
They marched straight through the fields, past more than a dozen girls in the same condition as Darciana. The girls stood watching as the men passed. No one said anything. Darciana walked next to Stefan's horse. Larda could tell the girl made him nervous, which she found perversely delightful. She had once seen Stefan slit a man's throat without blinking. That this pregnant slip of a girl could unnerve him when that had not was odd. Darciana talked softly to him. No one noticed Stefan until it was too late. But this girl had seen him and would not stop seeing him. Larda liked her. An older woman ran from the middle of a field and caught up to them. She grabbed Darciana's hand and halted her. Darciana leaned close, whispering. Apparently satisfied with Darciana's explanation, the woman fell into step. Silvio's manor was tucked into the side of a hill, overlooking the farmland. 10 guards stood in front. Their helmets were slightly askew, swords and spears clutched so tightly they shook. Larda stopped her horse directly in front of them, well within striking distance. She remembered Hunyadi riding into an enemy city, broad-shouldered and armed with unassailable confidence. She wrapped the same around herself.
I am here to see Silvio.
The guards looked at each other, at a loss. Lara has 70 men at her back. The guards knew as well as she did that what she wanted, she would get.
Tell him I will receive him here, and then you are welcome to join my men, or to flee. Any other course of action will not end well for you.
The shortest man, broad-chested and of middle years, gave her an ugly sneer.
I do not take orders from women.
My men do not have a similar problem.
Lara lifted a hand. The man fell, a crossbow bolt sticking out of his chest. A hair-lipped guard jumped away as though death were contagious, which in this case it was.
I will go fetch him, miss, madam, my lady, I, right now.
Two of the guards turned and ran. The rest began edging toward Lara's men, hands far from their weapons.
Hello, Miron,
Dartiana said. She stepped forward, blocking the path of one of the guards. There was something verminous about his face and his beady eyes that darted around.
You remember when we used to play together as children?
He did not look at her. She held her hand out to the older woman next to her.
You remember when my mother gave you some of our milk, because you were starving?
His lip curled in a snarl, but still he did not respond.
You remember when I screamed and screamed, and you stood outside the door and did nothing? You remember when he offered you, what did he call them? Seconds. You remember what you did?
The man had the gall to finally meet her gaze. He shrugged, face set in cruel indifference. He shoved his shoulder into her to push her out of the way.
I remember that too,
her mother said as she brought her hand between them. Lara's view was blocked by the soldier's body. He made an odd noise, twitching. Then he stumbled backward, blood-soaked hands tugging ineffectually at the rough wooden handle of a knife protruding from his stomach. He sank down against the stone wall of the house. His rat-like eyes looked up in shock and pain at the girl and her mother.
And now, we will never remember you again.
Dartiana turned her back on him. Stefan pulled a handkerchief from his vest and offered it to her. She passed it to her mother, who wiped the blood from her hands.
What is the meaning of this?
A portly man, face-veined and splotchy with age and alcohol, stumbled out of the manor. He wore a velvet vest with a gold necklace and a black cap on his large head.
Silvio?
Lara asked.
I am here to negotiate your support.
Lara drew her crossbow and shot him in the chest. One of Toma's men shouted in surprise.
Lara turned her horse. That went well. We have the full support of this estate now. It is yours.
She pointed to Dartiana. Dartiana nodded, a dazed expression on her face. Her mother finished cleaning her hands and gave the handkerchief back to Dartiana.
I will tell the men.
No, Lara snapped. I did not say the land was theirs.
Or any of the fathers of this land. They forfeited their rights when they sold their daughters for food. Why did you let them live?
Dartiana's mother met Lara's gaze without shame.
I have 3 other daughters. I could not sacrifice myself without sacrificing them. Until today.
Lara wanted to argue, to chastise. Then she realized that this woman had come directly from working in the fields, where she had no need of a knife. How long had she carried it? How long had she treasured it in secret, waiting for the right moment? This woman was smart. She saw an opening, and she took it. Though why more people had not done this sooner, she did not understand. If the Valahians could see past titles and velvet, they would see that the true strength of the land, the true power, was theirs. All they needed was a knife and an opportunity. Lara would be both for them.
You are in charge, she said to the old woman.
You cannot do that,
Toma's man said.
We need a boyar.
Are you a boyar?
Lara snapped. The man opened his mouth to argue further.
I am the only royal blood here.
She stared at him until he bowed his head and looked away. Then she pointed at the body of the murdered soldier and addressed Dartiana's mother.
I trust you.
Treat your daughters and granddaughters better than their fathers have treated them.
Dartiana's mother nodded slowly, a determination settling around her eyes and replacing the shock.
What do we do when the prince finds out our boyar is dead?
Do what you have always done. Work the land. Let me worry about the prince.
The woman nodded, then dipped her head in a bow. We owe you everything.
Larda smiled. Do not forget it. I promise. I will not.
April 21st to the 28th. There you are, Cyprian said brightly, in defiance of the weariness painted on his face in dust and soot and traces of blood. Radu paused on the doorstep, trying his best to meet Cyprian's smile. He had just returned from a long night on the wall, a night of black punctuated by burning orange and darkest red. It was a relief to see Cyprian again. It was always a relief, because with the wall, reunions were never guaranteed. Cyprian leaned past him to open the door, gesturing excitedly. I found fruit preserves. I will not tell you what I had to do to get them, but...
Turks! Turks in the horn!
A boy screamed, running through the street. Cyprian and Radu shared a look of confusion and concern. Radu was too tired to know whether this feeling was excitement or dread. He sprinted after the boy, caught his sleeve, and dragged him to a stop.
The chain is broken.
The boy shook his head, eyes wide with excitement and fear.
They sailed their ships over land!
The boy wriggled free and darted away, shouting his news with no further explanation. Cyprian raised his eyebrows, concern overpowered by curiosity. He started walking in the direction of the seawall. Radu followed.
Do you have any idea what he is talking about? Cyprian asked. Maybe they were able to sneak in the same way our boat slipped out past them.
That worked because of the chaos. But there is no chaos on our side of the chain. No one sleeps. Watch is kept at all hours. There must be something else going on.
Radu trudged after Cyprian. He could not find the energy in himself to run anymore. He had spent half the night cutting down hooks that the Ottomans threw up to try to dislodge the barrels of earth that protected the defenders. It was wearying work. Even arrows singing past his ears barely registered after a few hours on barrel duty. But at least all he had done was remove hooks. He had not had to kill any of his brothers last night, which made it better than most. His mind was on endless barrels of earth as they climbed to the top of the seawall and looked over.
God's wounds, Radu whispered.
Nothing had prepared him for this. The Ottomans were, in fact, inside the horn. And just as the boy had said, they were sailing their ships over land. Three medium-sized galleys floated in the water, their crews laughing and waving their oars. Coming down a road of greased logs on the hill behind the horn, another galley slowly made its way toward the sea. The men aboard rowed their oars through the air, perfectly in sync. Oxen pulled from the front, and hundreds of men held ropes to control the descent. Cresting the hill behind the galley was yet another boat. A striped tent had been set up overlooking the boat's progress. Radu could not see clearly from this distance, but he suspected it shaded Mehmed himself. Surrounding the tent, a Yanacheri band played music more suited to a party than to war. The bright brass notes drifted across the horn to Radu and Cyprian. As the lower galley slid off the bank and into the sea, a cheer went up among the Ottomans.
Why do our ships do nothing?
Cyprian asked. Radu pointed to a row of cannons set up along the shore, aimed at the chain where Constantine's fleet floated, useless. A few ships were edging closer, apparently debating whether or not to risk the cannon fire. Without warning, a huge stone flew over the top of the city of Galata and came splashing into the water between the Byzantine fleet and the Ottoman galleys. It was so close to the nearest merchant ships that they bobbed in the waves from the impact. Mehmed had also solved the problem of how to fire from Galata. He could not, under treaty, place cannons in the city.
and so he had engaged the trebuchets from bygone years. They sat behind the city and flung rocks over into the water. A crash and a plume of dust from the middle of Galata proved that the trebuchet aim was not perfect, or perhaps it was deliberate, a warning to the people not to interfere. Radu was astonished at Mahmed's brilliance. In the meantime, yet another galley had slipped into the water, with two more on the way. Cyprian did not look at Radu. This plan had to be in the works for months, with all the supplies they would need, the logistics of it all. Did you know? Radu's chest was heavy with the weight of failure. Not only had he failed Mahmed with the navy, Mahmed had anticipated the failure. He had made plans without Radu, plans to circumvent everything. How could Radu hope to offer such a man anything?
I had no idea. Radu shook his head, the music from across the horn mocking him. I fear there may be even more plans I was not privy to.
Cyprian put a gentle hand on his shoulder.
If Mahmed suspected a hair of his beard knew his secrets, he would pluck it out and burn it.
Radu refused the comfort.
I cannot help any more.
He could not help anyone.
Nazira picked out worms from the little grain they had left.
Do you suppose we could eat these?
Radu grimaced.
If it came to it, we could. But if the siege lasts that long, Mahmed will have already lost. It is taking too long as it is.
I wish your escapade with ruining the food stores had been less successful.
Nazira gave him a wry smile.
There is still food enough in Galata, though no one has the money to buy it. My sabotage has not ended the siege, only made it more miserable.
Radu leaned forward, resting his head on the table. He was due back at the wall in the evening. His last few shifts had been uneventful. Lonely, too. And Cyprian was gone more often than not by the time Radu returned home. Evidently, Nazira was thinking of their host as well.
We could try to get more information from Cyprian.
Radu did not lift his head. He would not go there. Not yet.
Too dangerous.
Nazira sounded relieved.
I am glad you agree. Also, it feels wrong. To use Cyprian any more than we already are.
He is a good person, and I... Sometimes I cannot bear to even look at him, knowing what we are doing here. I cannot bear to look at any of them. Constantine is a good man, too. Yesinyani. All of them. The longer we are here, the harder it is to remember why it was so important that we take the city. I have fought alongside them. I have bled with them. I have stood shoulder to shoulder as we killed my Muslim brothers. How?
Radu's voice cracked, breaking on the last question.
How do we go on?
He whispered.
Nazira put a hand on his cheek.
You should ask to join Orhan and his men. They are kept away from the walls. You would not have to kill anyone. You should never have been put in that position. Your heart is too big for this work, Radu.
She leaned in and kissed his forehead.
I cannot imagine what you have been forced to see and do. No one could have clear eyes in the midst of that.
What does it matter? I have done no good.
You have, and we may yet do more. The kindest thing we can do for both sides is hasten the end of this siege. The longer it carries on, the worse it will be for everyone.
Nazira stood, pulling on her cloak. Though the days were warming up, the evenings were still cold.
I am going to meet with Helen. She complains that the last 3 days Coco has been even more on edge than usual, snapping at her and pacing incessantly.
Radu's interest was piqued.
He is their most important captain.
Precisely. Something is in motion for the sea. I do not know what, though.
Radu stood, too, glad for something to do.
I will send Amal to Galata. I can signal him from the roof of the Hagia Sophia, if something might be coming. and he can signal the galleys. I will watch Coco's house through the night.
It may be nothing,
Radu smiled grimly. Then it will fit in perfectly well with all my other contributions so far.
Radu settled into the shadows of a stoop 3 houses down from Coco's. Amal had sprinted away to make the crossing to Galata before the gates closed for the evening. He knew of a tower with guards under Mahmed's pay where he could watch for a signal. It would probably amount to nothing, but it was better than being on the walls. Anything was better than being on the walls. Radu let his mind drift, his thoughts punctuated by the distant beat of the bombardment. It never ceased, but in the heart of the city, it was merely background noise. The scent of smoke and burning, too, drifted as afterthoughts, and there was no scent of blood, merely the constant memory of it. Because Radu did not want to think, not about Mahmed, not about boats, not about Cyprian, he recited sections of the Quran, lost himself to the beauty and rhythm of them. There was still some peace to be found there. He was interrupted 2 hours before dawn. The door to Coco's house opened, and several cloaked figures stepped out, hurrying through the streets toward the horn. Radu ran in the opposite direction. The lock to the Hagia Sophia was as easy to pick now as though he had a key. He raced to the roof where he pulled out a lantern. 3 sides were polished metal, while the fourth was a pane of clear glass. He lit the wick inside, then pointed it toward Galata. He released a prayer of gratitude, like a breath. The night was clear enough for the warning to be seen. Just as Radu began to fear that Amal had not made it, a light answered him. It flashed 3 times in quick succession, then went dark. Radu blew his own light out. He did not know what, if anything, he had accomplished. Then a shooting star, burning brightly, moved slowly across the sky. It left a trail of light in its wake, like a signal to him from the heavens themselves. Radu lifted a hand toward it, remembering that night so long ago when he had watched stars fall with Mahmed and Lada. He closed his eyes, gratitude and warmth filling him. Perhaps the superstitious city was finally getting to him, but he could not help but see this as a sign. He had done a good thing. He had helped Mahmed. He went to the wall near the Romanus gate, sliding among the men as though he had been there all night. He made certain to say a few words to some of them, taking a place in their memories. Although he faced out toward the Ottomans, all his thoughts were focused on the horn at his back and the city between them. The bells began ringing an hour before dawn. Radu acted as surprised as everyone, looking up and down the wall as though he too suspected the attack was on this side. As soon as relief came, Radu joined the other men heading to the sea wall. Brief flashes of cannon fire illuminated the end of a battle. A small galley burned. Radu's stomach dropped, but as the galley drifted slowly in the water, its flames revealed one of the big merchant ships half-sunk and listing heavily. The merchant ship dragged itself away, flanked by 2 others. "What happened?" Radu asked a guard on the wall. "Did they try an attack?" The man shook his head.
"We did. Somehow they knew we were coming. Started firing before our ships had gotten close enough to surprise them. They sank one of our small ships."
Radu could have laughed with relief. Mahmed would know now that Radu still had use. The Italians would not risk another attack on the galleys, not after this. The Golden Horn was effectively neutralized. Dawn broke, illuminating the remains of the battle. Though several galleys smoked, there were no significant losses on the Ottoman side. Radu saw more masts than should have been in the water, though. And then he realized they were not masts. The wooden poles reaching up to the sky to greet the dawn were stakes. And on each of them, slowly revealed as the light touched them, an Italian sailor was impaled. In the middle, on the highest stake, Radu recognized Coco himself. On the hill above them, surrounded by Yanicheris, A white-turbaned figure in a purple cloak sat on a horse. Radu could not understand the scene in front of him. The Ottomans had won. They had decisively defeated the sneak attack. There was no reason for this, none except to torment the city. It felt needless. It felt cruel. Troubled, Radu watched the bodies as though his vigil could bring them peace, or bring him peace. This seemed less like war, and more like murder. And it was all because of him. A commotion farther down the wall finally drew his attention away from the stakes. He leaned out just in time to see the first battered Ottoman prisoner dropped over the side. A length of rope secured around the prisoner's neck went taut, and the body swung limply. Before Radu could shout, another prisoner had been hanged, and then another, and then another. He watched in horror as Ottoman prisoners were dropped like decorations, a tapestry of terror along the wall in response to the brutality across the horn. Unable to stand it, he ran toward the hanging men. Someone had to end this. These soldiers would be held accountable for such cruelty to prisoners. He stopped, though, when he saw the line of Ottoman prisoners waiting their turn. They were on their knees, some praying, some weeping, some too bloody and broken to do either. And standing behind them, staring out as tall and still as a pillar, directly across from Mehmed, was Constantine. Radu had been wrong. There were no good men in this city. And there were no good men outside of it, either. 36. Mid-April. Larda emerged from her tent to find her fire already lit and a pot of water boiling. She had forced Wana to stay behind to help run their base at Thomas' estate, in part because she trusted Wana to do it well, and in part because she did not want anyone fussing over her wretched hair. Since then, Larda had not woken to a fire. "What are you doing?" Larda asked Darciana. Darciana pointed to the pot. "Your options are weak pine tea or weak pine tea. You really need better provisions." "You know what I meant." Larda sat, taking a cup of blisteringly hot pine tea. It was weak, as promised. "I'm not riding through the country, charitably adopting all those who want to join my merry band. I am taking men who can fight. Besides, it is important that the land be tended to." "Why do you care so much about the land?" "Because it is mine. I have no desire to be prince of a country with no crops. People need to eat." Darciana laughed.
"You will be prince, then?"
Larda did not share her mirth.
"There is no other title. I will be Vivode, Prince of Valahia, and I will make the land into the country my people deserve."
Darciana eased herself down, moving awkwardly with her swollen belly.
"Very well, then. You take the men for soldiers, and you leave the women to plant, so that we do not all starve. And what will you do with the boyars?"
As though summoned, a letter from Toma Basarab was delivered at that moment by a smooth-faced boy. Larda read the letter with a scowl. Nikolai sat next to her, trying to read over her shoulder.
"What does he say?"
"He disagrees with my negotiating tactics." Her temper bubbled hotter than the tea. "And he says he is joining us, to make certain I do not negotiate like that with any more boyars." She threw the letter to the ground, standing and pacing.
"Who is he to tell me what to do?
You saw Sulevju. You saw his land, what he was doing. Was I not right?"
Nikolai read over the letter with a resigned expression.
"I am not saying you are not right, but perhaps more thought and care should be taken with future boyars."
"Why?"
Darciana said.
"We need them." Larda snorted.
"We need them.
No one needs them. They are maggots feeding on my land and doing nothing for it."
Nikolai wore a long-suffering expression.
"They are necessary for organization. They collect taxes. They run the farmlands. They muster troops from the men living in their provinces.
Larda leaned forward.
Tell me, Nikolai, does it look like they are doing a good job?
Nikolai smiled.
The roads are impassable with thieves.
The fields are fallow or untended.
The boyars are fat and wealthy while the people starve. The prince has no military support unless they decide to give it, which they never do.
But the fact remains that is how the country runs. Figure out how to use them better, control them better. But you cannot get to the throne without them.
Larda sat in disgust.
Why not?
You are already using Toma Basarab. Trust that he knows what he is doing.
I do not trust him at all.
Nikolai rubbed his scar. Did you think he could just hand you the throne? You need allies. You need the boyars. You cannot skip past them. And to get them, you need him.
Nikolai put an arm around Larda, drawing her close.
Make a deal with the devil until you are both over the bridge.
Am I the devil? Or are they?
Nikolai laughed again, but he did not answer. Bogdan sat on Larda's other side. His eyes lingered on Nikolai's arm around her shoulder. He offered her the inside of his bread. It was the softest part, her favorite. He took the crusts without expecting thanks. He simply did it, as he did everything for her, as he always had. It sparked an idea.
What if I take land? If I give the land to the people who deserve it, like Darciana's mother? I get their loyalty. The boyars claim things based on centuries of blood. The land is theirs by birthright. So I take it from those who oppose us. I give it to people whose vision for Valahia matches my own. They have nothing to claim other than my favor, and they owe all allegiance to me.
She met Bogdan's approving stare and offered him a smile. He ducked his head, a pleased flush spreading across his cheeks.
You cannot kill all the boyars.
Nikolai helped himself to some tea.
Oh?
Nikolai looked up sharply, narrowing his eyes.
They did not ask for their birthright. They have done nothing to you, and you have no guarantee that they ever will. I do not think you were wrong to kill that last pig, but slaughtering every noble in the country will have repercussions even you cannot handle.
When Larda did not respond, he threw his hands up in exasperation, spilling his tea.
They are related to nobility in other countries. You will draw too much attention and too much ire. Someone will retaliate. Besides, they have families, they have influence, and they are people.
Larda gazed into the flames, letting them fill her vision.
Of course. I will listen to Toma Basarab and accept allegiance from those who offer it. But no one keeps anything without meriting it. That goes for every Valahian.
She blinked, spots of light dancing in front of her eyes.
Including you, Darciana. So I ask again, why are you here?
You have no lady's maid.
Nikolai snorted.
You are mistaken. Our Larda is no lady. She is a dragon.
Bogdan growled low and angry in his throat. Larda laughed, patting Bogdan's knee. Then she tossed a handful of dirt and dry evergreen needles at Nikolai.
No one asked for your opinion.
My opinions are gifts I distribute freely, asking neither permission nor payment.
Take your gifts elsewhere, Bogdan grumbled.
Larda waved her hand.
Nikolai is right. I need no lady's maid, because I am not a lady. I am a soldier.
Darciana smiled, smug and self-satisfied.
Precisely. A soldier does not have time to wash her monthly courses from her clothes.
Larda's cheeks burned, and she looked at the ground rather than at Nikolai and Bogdan. Darciana's stomach loomed in the edge of her vision, and then she had a thought. A terrible thought. Larda stood, nearly falling into the fire. She grabbed Darciana's hand.
Come with me.
The girl yelped, struggling to her feet.
Larda dragged her away from the camp and into the trees.
Tell me about being with child. How did it happen? How long did it take?